Hello, good people, and welcome to this broadcast of Alchemy of Light. I am Jamil Graham, your host, and welcome all. This is a very exciting week. We will be moving into current events. We have two very dynamic and intelligent, well-educated on multidimensional speakers to join us. And the Alchemy of Light broadcast is a celebration and exploration of consciousness, how we feel and think, because everything begins with a feeling. And the events of the past 10 days or so have stirred a lot of feelings. We are in the height of the election process. We have been greeted with a geoengineered hurricane tropical storm Sandy, the one of many that have become quite a hallmark of the past decade. And we have the great honor of welcoming Mr. Alfred Lambermont Weber to discuss this phenomena and other things. Welcome, Alfred.
Thank you. I'm very, very happy to be here.
It's a pleasure. And you are the founder of Exopolitics, and Exopolitics being the politics, government, and law in the universe. And for more information about Alfred, please go to exopolitics.com. And our other guest today is a very gifted researcher and Livermore Lab refugee, we might call her affectionately. She has brought us a tremendous amount of insight and information on the radiation, particularly depleted uranium, but also has lent her moral conscience in sitting in international tribunals for Afghanistan and many things that have put her in the limelight of let's call that meaningful controversy, when somebody has courage to just say things and is willing to just stand in her truth. It's really an honor to welcome you, Lorraine Murray, to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. Hello.
Thank you. And just to spice things up, I would say it also put me in the gun sight of the Pentagon. They are definitely not pleased with what I've exposed.
Well, thank you for exposing this anyway. And thank you, Alfred, who's been on the mission of truth-telling and exploring the veil, what's going on behind the veil, for over 40 years. And it is really an interesting time we are sharing, as we are now entering what I feel is the lifting of the veil, the time when all the secrets come to light, when the areas where we've been denied access simply are not holding as strong for the sake of the cosmos, for the sake of the energy coming in to heighten our consciousness, as well as the natural evolution of the human itself in its own maturing process, ready to receive new information, new truths, new ways of looking at things. And I want to offer that in this discussion, we have a lot of places we can go with the current election/selection process happening, the importance of discussing the geoengineering that now dominates our weather patterns at this point. I feel very confident in saying that, especially after Sandy. Something about Sandy really cemented the consciousness on a very, very broad level. I have been really surprised and impressed and excited at how many people suddenly woke up and said, wait just a minute, this doesn't seem natural. Now the veil is lifting and we're ready for real, solid, grounded information to help us mature ourselves and have a better understanding, that we might be more productive and make better decisions in the times ahead, because there will be many, many decisions coming right on the heels of all of this. This is just the very beginning of this final rupture of sorts. And so I would like to please ask you both and I'll just put the questions out there and let, you know, spirit move whoever wants to come forward. The conversation, I would like to start with the geoengineering and the capacity of these machines. In brief, what is the, in the science world, in the nuts and bolts of these things, what is the capacity of these machines? Because now we have a long list of events, and I will quote from Alfred's news live that you put out just yesterday, that you gave us a fantastic list of HAARP events, current HAARP events, that started with the September 11th, controlled false flag demolition of the World Trade Centers in New York City in 2001, moving through the BP oil spill, the Fukushima disaster that is continuing to spew radiation around the whole planet, the Haiti earthquake, the current events of Isaac, and then this most recent Sandy. And I would like to add one HAARP event to offer for commentary as well, which is the new storm called the Derecho that happened in May of 2012 of this year, which I also thought was very targeted toward the anointing of this Obama, this selection process. I felt very strongly that the Derecho was also a HAARP geoengineered storm with an intention to move our consciousness. This is a very specific consciousness reality, because these storms put in our minds these ideas and beliefs, and if we just allow them to come in and start making their homes in our feelings, and we feel that a derecho is a real storm, and we feel that Sandy is just one of those things of nature, we just start to become very easily molded into this new version of conscious reality that perhaps just leads to this new world order. And we have a choice about that. That is our choice. We can educate ourselves. We can open our hearts and open our minds, find our feet and have our feelings and do our screaming and our crying and our fear and do it and really come up with some really good decisions that will make all the difference for ourselves and our children and our children's children's children. So that is my entry for this conversation. I'm grateful to the Muse for bringing this opportunity, and I would like to pass this now to both of you to please share with us how these geoengineering HAARP storms have come about, and about how these have the signatures of those particular phenomena versus anything we might have known in past as natural.
Did you want to talk first, Alfred?
No, Lorraine. Why don't you take that one?
Okay. Part of the most important reason for acquiring knowledge, for listening today, for investigating and doing your own research, is that it's very empowering, and it makes things that we're fearful of less frightening. And also, sharing the information with other people is building community and pulling people together to face a formidable opposition that is bent on genociding much of the population of the planet today and destroying the biosphere. So we really have no choice. We do have to face this right, straight, walk into the wind and face it, and bring people with you so you're not alone. The whole purpose for creating weapons is for the military. And the military has two jobs. Their jobs are to destroy things and to kill lots of people. So weapons that produce shock waves that destroy things and kill people are one of their top choices for weapons. And today, these weapons have developed over thousands of years into weapons that can release tremendous amounts of energy and therefore very, very, very large shock waves. In the maybe about 1,000 or 1,500 years ago, the Chinese discovered or invented gunpowder, and that was probably the first chemical weapon. And they used it for celebrations and holidays and very little as a destructive force, although sometimes they would toss a gunpowder bomb, small one, into a group of horsemen to frighten the enemy and scare the horses and everything. So that was the first chemical weapon, and since then we know that plastic explosives have developed and other types of chemical weapons which release energy. And the energy released in chemical weapons is from the electrons in the outer shell of the atom. Now, in the 1800s, researchers in the West, this would be England and Italy and France and Germany and the U.S. and so forth, began to discover and do a lot of research on how to release energy from the nucleus of the atom. And this is millions of times more energy than the electrons in the outer shell can release, because elements like iron, calcium, hydrogen, helium, all these building blocks that make life possible and build our planet and our solar system and universe are all made in star processes. So iron is made in giant, in red dwarfs. Plutonium and uranium, for instance, are made in supernovas. And so the energy that is stuffed into the nucleus of an atom is the product of an extremely energetic and high temperature star process. We can't even imagine the forces involved in just creating a little helium atom or a plutonium atom or a uranium atom. They're horrendous. And so when man discovered how to release energy from the nucleus, that was the Manhattan Project, and they created the first nuclear bombs. They dropped them on the living populations, civilian populations, in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in World War II in 1945, August 1945. And hundreds of thousands of people were killed, not just by the shockwave, but by the ionizing radiation, the huge amounts of energy released from the nucleus of the plutonium and uranium atoms. And that's we're basically a bag of water, living systems are. So you can imagine how devastating that much energy would be to a living system. It would just be like boiling off water. Now, in tiny local things like cells. So then that was a real the nuclear bombs were a real weapon of mass destruction. And since then, under the cover of the Cold War, the oligarchy or the New World Order, it's the continuation of the East India Company and the Dutch East India Company. So it's the Anglo-Dutch monarchs, Queen Elizabeth and Queen Beatrix of Holland, and international financiers. And very few people know about Dope Inc., but Dope Incorporated is the global drug cartel and industry, which is completely hidden. And that economy has a revenue, underground revenue, that is 5 times greater than the global economy that we know as the public. So during the Cold War, Star Wars and ballistic missile defense and missile defense, all those programs were actually a cover story for the most horrific weapon of mass destruction system ever created, and that is called HAARP. And it's a global system or network of antennas, the international financiers, City of London and so forth, finance the early research. They determine what science will be done and how it is applied, and it's always to their benefit and to the disadvantage of the global public. So HAARP was developed, co-developed secretly by the Soviet Union and the United States, and the Livermore Nuclear Weapons Lab, where I worked and became a whistleblower in 1991, is where most of it was developed in the U.S., although Los Alamos and other institutions were involved. For instance, the mind control studies on animals and then the application for human use on the global public was developed in the monkey colony at UC Davis, not very far from UC Berkeley and Stanford University, who were very heavily involved. So one day, I spent from the year 2000 until about 3 or 4 years ago studying nothing but the science and the physics and the mathematics and the chemistry and everything else of ionizing radiation. But Alfred and I were working on a world space preservation treaty. He had written a wonderful bill, H.R. 2977, in 2001 for Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And I was able to get the city of Berkeley the city council to pass the first resolution declaring the space above the city of Berkeley a space weapons free zone. And that had a huge impact. I never know what I'm doing. I just want to do something, so I just try. And the most surprising things have happened, because that Berkeley treaty, I'm sorry, resolution, ended up causing a dispute between President George Bush, who wanted Canada to sign on to missile defense, another drain on their revenue, and Paul Martin, who was the prime minister, secretly agreed to it. So the citizens of Canada, with Alfred's help and encouragement, took the Berkeley resolution and collected thousands of signatures and walked into the Canadian Parliament and presented them and exposed Martin's secret agreement. So within about 6 months, he was out of office, and I think Harper was the one who followed him as Prime Minister of Canada, and he still is. So that's a little story about why we should do things and even things that we don't know we can do, because Gandhi said the miracle of the nuclear age is not how it changed the world, it's how it changes us. And I think Alfred would certainly agree that the work he and I have done together and collaboration and so forth, as well as other work that we're doing on our own, has had a tremendous influence and made a tremendous change in our own lives. And it's been extremely empowering. So going back to the weapons of mass destruction, I will explain how the amounts of energy released by these each generation of weapons of mass destruction have increased the destructive power of the bankers to bring about regional and global transformations such as storms, earthquakes, and it's all to benefit them economically. So when Hiroshima and Nagasaki happened, those were rather small nuclear bombs. I think they were like 30 kilotons, something like that. And so that means that they released the energy that would be equivalent to what 30 kilotons of TNT would release in an explosion. Now, when Fukushima happened, I've been on 20 speaking tours in Japan since the year 2000, and I actually have toured nuclear power plants. I've worked very closely with members of the Japanese parliament, the media, and especially the dear citizens of Japan, which this horrible nuclear tragedy has occurred for the second time. And I actually predicted a Fukushima-type disaster in a nuclear power plant in Japan when I wrote an article solicited by the Japan Times in 2004. And because Japan has 56 nuclear reactors in a country the size of California, and it's one of the most active tectonic earthquake zones in the world, they have a magnitude 8.5 earthquake every 5 years on average in Japan. That's a horrendous danger to put a technology like nuclear power in a country that's so active. And so when Fukushima happened, I began doing intense research, and Alfred and I began a series of news updates every week or 2 weeks for about 7 months. And I asked the Manhattan Project scientist, he's probably one of the last living ones, Marion Falk. He still lives in Livermore, and he made the hydrogen bomb work for the U.S. government by solving all the problems on it, which no other scientist could do. So he must be good. And I asked him to please calculate the amount of energy released in equivalent in nuclear bombs released by the Fukushima earthquake. And he calculated it and called me a couple days later. He said, I calculated that the equivalent amount of energy released by the Fukushima earthquake was equivalent to 1 million Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs. So that's how each iteration or each generation of weapons of mass destruction are being developed to produce greater and greater destruction and harm. And there's also a very interesting 5-minute film that I found on the internet, and I'll have to forward that to both of you. And that is a video clip animated of global wars over the last 1,000 years. And you can see very clearly that global wars were at a minimum until the 20th century. And it just turned the whole planet into what looks like an endless war, covering much larger regions and doing much more devastation. So when I discovered that the U.S. and the Soviets had co-developed HAARP secretly during the Cold War, I began to investigate the politics of intelligence agencies, weapons of mass destruction, and secret collaboration by certain members of governments around the world who are creating this illusion of pretend enemies. The U.S. and Russia have always been very, very, very good friends. And the three strongest Christian countries in the world, Russia, Germany, and the U.S., are very tied together because of the Christian beliefs of the public in those countries. And that's also why World War One, World War Two, all these wars in the 20th century have occurred. It's been a century of genociding Christians in Russia. 70 million ethnic Christian Russians were killed by the Bolsheviks. And something like 350 out of maybe 600 Bolshevik leaders all came from Brooklyn, and they were funded by Kuhn Loeb, Jacob Schiff, who Al Gore's daughter married into the Jacob Schiff family. And then World War II, the Germans, President Eisenhower, who was a Swedish Jew, built death camps all over Germany. He was at West Point with my grandfather, and he was the worst of 150 generals. And yet Bernard Baruch, who was his mentor and pretty much controlled the president in World War II, he selected Eisenhower from that list of 150 soldiers, and he took him from the bottom. But it's because Eisenhower frequently stated, "I hate Germans." And as soon as Germany surrendered, Eisenhower was sent to Germany, and he built death camps, and he murdered 5 million ethnic Christian Germans while he was in command there. So we see a century of genocides, of eugenics, of a Holocaust against Christians that far, far outnumber what the Jews claim happened to them in the Holocaust of Germany in World War II. In fact, Hitler took very good care of most of the Jewish prisoners of war because he wanted to trade them for German prisoners of war with the Allied countries. So now we see that HAARP is a weapon that has energized the very energy of the universe, the energy of the supernovas, the energy of the solar system, the energy of the planet, the energy locked up in natural processes in the world, on planet Earth, earthquakes, storms, droughts, floods. All of these things, all of these phenomena have been weaponized, and these scientists have learned how to artificially trigger large amounts of energy that are locked up in natural events, but they can artificially trigger and release them. And even in the 1960s, Professor Gordon MacDonald, who was a geophysicist at UCLA and an advisor to many presidents, science advisor, was writing and warning against this horrific weapon, and he was the one who designed the tectonic warfare for HAARP. So if people are interested in reading what he wrote in 1968, the chapter is called How to Wreck the Environment. It's on the Internet, and it's very, very insightful. And he said, in the future, when this weapon is operational, he said, we have no idea what we're doing. We have no business developing this weapon because we have no idea what the consequences of using it and making it operational are. he was totally right. And it's just really a sad, very, very tragic direction that a very small group of people have taken this planet in, and in the last 50 years, they have destroyed the genome of the entire planet. They've altered it, and it took 4.5 billion years to for that genome to evolve in the way it has. So they are playing with nature, Mother Nature, and when Mother Nature turns around and kicks you, it's going to be unprecedented, unpredictable, horrific, and there are going to be very severe consequences. So that's what how I'd like to introduce HAARP, and maybe you have another question now.
Okay. Did you want to share anything about HAARP, Alfred, or shall we move on now?
Well, no. I think that that was a fairly complete treatment of the subject, and my points are really on the application of HAARP to achieve certain socio-political ends.
Okay, I think that's a really good place to go with it. I would only at this point comment on how important it is to realize this multidimensional capacity that we all have to look at these things. Lorraine just gave us a very deep look at the backstory of HAARP, which is very important in educating ourselves about a bigger picture going on. And it doesn't make sense if we just focus on it just does these killing things. It really, we really do need that bigger picture and the deeper levels and the multidimensional pieces of it. So thank you so much, Lorraine. And yes, please, let's move into the direction of the implications. That's the point. This is the driving force that we're all now being woken up to.
Alfred.
Sorry, what? I missed that.
Will you please now share with us the implications of and how the HAARP is being used?
Well, yes. I think that HAARP is being used, I believe, with a definite script, and it seems to be being used to implement various policies. Number one, a world depopulation policy. Secondly, to implement a world a new world political system known as the New World Order, elite theme park, world dictatorship. You know, there's a whole number of names, and so there are strategy and tactics, and if we take the case of Hurricane Sandy, which is really two bookends, HAARP, false flag, Hurricane Sandy, which were October 22nd to 31st, 2012, and Hurricane Isaac, August 21st to September 1st, 2012, have to be looked at as two bookends with a specific tactical and strategic application of environmental warfare and a psyops on the U.S. and world political systems by an international war crimes racketeering organization that, in fact, controls the HAARP chemtrails weapons of mass destruction system that Loren was describing earlier. And Hurricane Sandy, very simply, seems to be a false flag operation with multiple purposes. And that is, number one, further rehearsing a New World Order lockdown of the U.S. Secondly, securing the reelection of what is now recognized as a global New World Order asset, Barry Satoru. That's his legal name, otherwise known as Barack Obama. That's a manufactured name. That's his Manchurian candidate name. And there are more and more commentators in the alternative news referring to him as a Manchurian candidate. Other purposes involve activating catastrophobia, which is like a mass fear of catastrophe in the North American and world public, to implement things like the North American Union, to implement world government and other New World Order projects. And so if we look at whether or not Hurricane Sandy has been successful, the answer is that it's been very successful. As of yesterday, ABC News was reporting that a number of states, parts of New Jersey, for example, were under martial law. Martial law is military government, and that's where the constitutional government is set aside, probably under the executive orders signed by Obama for these purposes. So you have the New World Order president sign the orders that are then activated by the HAARP false flag event. And so that brings in military government by which all constitutional guarantees are canceled and the constitutional order is canceled and the military becomes the unilateral government with the President Obama as the absolute dictator with power of life and death. So that seems to be very effective as rehearsing a New World Order lockdown of the U.S. And if you look at the plans that have been in place for a long time for the North American superhighway, which runs from Mexico right to Winnipeg, which is the Masonic, Winnipeg, Canada, Manitoba, which is the Masonic capital of Canada, and which divides the U.S. so that there will be provisions for internal passports and, you know, you won't be able to go from one side to the other of a superhighway without authority. It looks like Hurricane Sandy, they're test running what martial law is like. So it looks like it is a rehearsal of the New World Order lockdown. Secondly, as to securing the reelection of New World Order global asset Barry Satoru, Barack Obama, and I say that because his legal name is Barry Satoru and his Manchurian candidate name is Barack Obama. That's a manufactured name. His biological father is not the Kenyan civil servant Barack Obama, who was assassinated in an arranged automobile accident in 1982, which was arranged by the CIA as part of this buildup of the Manchurian candidate. Now, Barack Obama's approval ratings as of November 1st, 2012 stood at 50%, and no sitting U.S. president with a 50% approval rating has failed to achieve reelection. And if you examine the statistics on October 27th, 2012, this is prior to Sandy really hitting with its surge, Obama's approval rating had plummeted precipitously. In fact, those were the headlines. Had plummeted precipitously 7 points from 53% to 46%. And at that point, Romney's surge was that Romney, such that Romney was on his way to winning. And so in 48 hours after that, the Sandy surge hit, and now Obama's ratings are at 50%. And I saw last night a statistic study in which they showed that Obama's statistical probability of winning the election, this is including the Electoral College, which he would get 303 votes. So the Electoral College is over 80%, and is, I believe it's 82%, and Romney's is at 18%. So, and that was done right in those two or three days between October 27th and October 31st by the storm, by the HAARP engineered storm. And additionally, on October 27th, here in the West Coast, there was a Haida Gwaii earthquake, which was very shallow. I think it was at 17 kilometers of depth. Probably had a HAARP signature on it. Occurred at 8.04 p.m., and that caused a tsunami warnings in Hawaii, where they had 100,000 people evacuate. And that could be looked at as more catastrophobia, almost like a pincer movement of an environmental war, HAARP engendered catastrophobia on the West Coast and on the East Coast, a pincer movement to promote the North American Union. And in fact, that Friday, Haida Gwaii is an island of the Haida, where the Haida First Nations live, that's just north of Vancouver Island, which is about the length of the state of California. And here in Vancouver, you and I, Jamil, had gone the day before the earthquake to the Museum of Anthropology to see the Haida art collection. So we were talking about the synchronicity involved in seeing the Haida collection. Some of the other aspects I think that bear mentioning is what I call the friendly fascism aspect of Sandy. And friendly fascism is a concept that was very current back in the mid-70s when I was a futurist at Stanford Research Institute and involved as the director of the proposed Carter White House extraterrestrial communication study. And if you look at the loss of life from Hurricane Sandy is very, very low. I believe that the loss of life now, or at least as of yesterday, was about 100 persons. Perhaps it's up to 150 persons now. When you compare that with the other profiles of typical HAARP false flag environmental war events, such as the 2008 Myanmar cyclone, where 150,000 persons were killed, or the 2010 Haiti earthquake, we call that the Vancouver Olympics earthquake, where 200,000 persons were killed in order to, so that the HAARP controllers, Rothschild companies, could get hold of the licenses to exploit the gold and petroleum reserves under Haiti. friendly fascism is a concept of the iron fist inside a velvet glove, and in a way, Barry Satoru, Barack Obama, embodies friendly fascism. That is, it's a smile. It's so user-friendly. And he's just one of the people. So that rather than carrying out a genocidal environmental war attack, which they have done always, the 150,000 dead in Myanmar, the 200,000 dead in at the Haiti earthquake, all at the level of Nagasaki or Hiroshima, there's only 100 to 150 dead in Hurricane Sandy, because from a friendly fascism point of view, what the goals were to tilt it to Obama, tilt the election to Obama, not do an environmental war attack, and to preserve Obama as a global New World Order asset in the friendly fascism tradition. If the storm had hit with 150,000 dead, it would have not allowed this unfoldment of a second phase, which may be coming up in 2013 and 14, which we can talk about later. Now, some of the other aspects which we'll come up to now, and these are the New World Order aspects, very closely allied to the friendly fascism aspects. And this is something which you might, you know, I just call on people to really kind of open their minds to this, because this is right brain information, and it's how the sort of satanic, there's some very excellent books on the available now, there is free downloads on the internet, on the banking cartel, the City of London-based banking bloodline banking cartel that, in fact, controls HAARP, and it's clear that they are satanic. One of these books is called The Illuminati, the satanic cult that has hijacked the world, and it's about the bloodline bankers. If you look at, for example, one of the central concepts that emerged during the sort of the upper theater of this, of the drama of Hurricane Sandy, it's that Christopher Christie, Governor Chris Christie, emerged as a major factor, and he is the governor of New Jersey. And here, the satanic bloodline bankers cult, using HAARP, they created a storm that drove Christ Christie into Obama's arms. So here you have this storm raising Obama and Christ Christie into prominence. And these are all things that go into people's unconscious, but they're part of the drama, and the controllers actually think this way. It comes very much out of the Tavistock traditions that are behind the controllers, i.e. a lot of mind control and programming and conditioning. They're very big on conditioning. And this storm really highlights, I think, once again, the three major archetypal figures in the New World Order panoply, what I call upper theater, and Barack Obama's role in that. Only three people have been allowed to speak at the temple of the New World Order in the capital of the New World Order in London, and that's Westminster Hall, and that's the Pope, the Queen, and the Obama. And I call him the Obama because he has an archetypal role there. The Pope is sort of the, you know, he's acting as God's representative, and that's what the archetype is there, and the Queen is kind of the regent, and the Obama is kind of the world president. And now the Queen will either, rumor has it, demise or transition and hand the crown over to her grandson, skip a generation, and make Prince William the first global king, and it'll be the first Zionist bloodline, Illuminati, satanic king, because both Prince William and his consort Kate are of the banker's bloodline stock.
Goldsmith,
right. So these are some of the multidimensional, to use your word, Jamil, factors that are occurring in this use of the planetary weapon of mass destruction and planetary weapon of mass mind control, which is the HAARP chemtrails weapon.
I think that's a very important point, the conditioning. The consciousness has been conditioned over centuries to accept war, accept destruction, accept violence on all levels against everything, by and by, to the degree that we have been sitting idle on a lot of levels while the active genocide is continuing in the Middle East, Afghanistan, and the Iraqi devastation, the continuing tension, the flattening of Libya, those are the big ones, but there's ongoing genocidal involvement that the U.S. in particular has a very leading role in. And in the consciousness that's being conditioned to believe that is okay, I really feel that is connected to the way this country was colonized. You know, it was colonized using genocide as the most important factor, because this land actually had millions of people on it. And that being suppressed in our consciousness, I think, has led to a great deal of this cognitive dissonance or this complete denial of the fact that the U.S. is a warring nation, that it was founded as a warring nation. Its policy of colonization through the leadership of, well, now it's coming to light, the Queen, the Pope, all these lines that are now coming to view have been driving the American, now Israel is the most prominent sidekick of military assistance. Talk about a rogue military regime that just does what it wants, that is a huge player in the ongoing genocide, the ongoing intimidation around the globe. And the Commonwealth has been conditioned to believe somehow that this is okay, or that we are not able to address this, that this is our nature, that this is what's human destiny is all wrapped up in this. So on the subliminal levels, we are just being friendly fascism. I really like that term, that if slavery can, you know, spare us a dime, we will be okay with that. And it looks like on one level, the entire mass of the U.S. has been set up to just sort of gently bend over and take it. And I really appreciate that we can make other decisions and really start to see that there are actually players in the upper theater, to use your word, the upper theater, of actually a driving force behind this. Now, I think it's time, two things, to go. We could go exopolitical at this point, because we have human players, but we also have extraterrestrial components that make more sense out of why this planet itself would be targeted for such a level of destruction. Because if there was a need for a new world order with, to summarize, a slave population that would be genetically altered to live in nuclear holocaust conditions, to bottom line it, well, who would do that? You know, it opens another question in my mind. Now, we have these great theater players, and the theater is elaborate beyond. I mean, I have to give them credit. They're very thorough, you know. It's been very well thought out and executed. But perhaps this is the question to go back to you, Alfred, with the exopolitical component, because who would actually want to destroy a planet, and what good could that possibly serve the cosmos?
Let
me just talk here.
I wanted to make a comment about what you said in your last statement.
Okay, good. Yeah, please.
What I wanted to discuss just for a few minutes is the continuing monarchical claim on land in the modern world, because it throws a significant light on modern governments, and many of them continue to use the principles of government and power and land ownership, which are monarchical in origin, and they are very anti-citizen in principle. This is why 85% of the world owns nothing and 15% of the world population owns everything. And this is from a very interesting book, Who Owns the World? The Hidden Facts Behind Land Ownership. And this is by Kevin Cahill, who's a retired Sandhurst military officer in England, and he works in the British Parliament now, and he actually sent me this book and autographed it. So in his book, he says, quote, "Our first step towards understanding the nature of monarchy and of power is with St. Augustine of Hippo, who writes in The City of God in A.D. 432, and this is quote from his book, "What are thieves' purchases but little kingdoms? For in thefts, the hands of the underlings are directed by the commander. The confederacy of them is sworn together, and the pillage is shared by the law amongst them. And if these ragamuffins grow up to be able enough to keep forts, build habitations, possess cities, and conquer adjoining nations, then their government is no more called thievish, but graced with the eminent name of kingdom," unquote. And then he goes on in his book, Who Owns the World, quote, "The historian De Juvenal cites St. Augustine and then writes this piece about the Norman conquest of England, which began in 1066. And just remember, William the Conqueror led that Norman conquest of England from the European continent, and our next king of England, Prince William, has the same name. There is no accident about that. But anyway, St. Augustine, about the Norman conquest, said, quote, "We have often seen them in the imagination, the greedy horde embarking at Saint-Valery-sur-Somme, and then arrived at London, having the country carved up amongst themselves by a victorious bandit chief, seated on his throne of stone. And he adds, quote, power of this kind can make no claim to legitimacy. It pursues no just end. Its one concern is the profitable exploitation of conquered and submissive subjects. It lives off the subject populations, unquote. So therefore, it's parasites. It's a parasitic relationship with humanity. And then he goes on, this is just what modern monarchies still do, but with their claws wrapped in the velvet of public relations. Think of Queen Elizabeth and Queen Beatrix. Which brings us to a crucial point. Power has been mentioned several times, but never defined. Power, to give its simplest definition, is the capacity or ability to obtain obedience. The extent of power in any situation can be measured by this definition. And the mechanism for obtaining that power very often is extortion and racketeering. And that's how harp and disasters and wars and everything are being used. It's to extort the fruit of our labors generation after generation so no one can accumulate anything through wars, famines, disasters now that can be artificially triggered. That's all I had to say.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's very profound insight.
Mm. And so if we've created a self-destructive path, there must be some end game because there is an intelligence that has even a bigger agenda, possibly. And I feel that we can learn a lot by really stretching ourselves into the exopolitics, into the extraterrestrial component. And in that also gives us the door to our own divinity, to the fact that we are not these human bodies that have been brought here. We have chosen to come here. And whenever our soul's work has completed for the mission, for the maturing, for all of the things that the souls choose to come here, we continue and our life force is eternal. And in the extraterrestrial component, that is also what is a foundational understanding, I believe. And the planet itself as one planet in the multiverse might be equivalent to how we would look at our neighborhoods. You know, we have this, I live in this neighborhood, and then there's that neighborhood, you know, 10 miles away from me. So it's, in a way, I see a lot of similarities in consciousness. It's just the scale changes. So I'd really like to explore that exopolitical conversation. And why would a planet, you know, how would this planet perhaps look in the eyes of one who finds it, this life, so parasitically appetizing to the point of ultimate destruction?
Yeah. You know, rather than at this point go into the direction of a discussion of the dimensional ecology of the planet, that is, the various dimensions of intelligent civilizations that may be, have planet Earth as their concern, which is a subject unto itself. I think that we've started a discussion in the first hour with regard to Sandy and what seems to be a ratcheting up of the New World Order agenda. And it seems to be a quickening of the New World Order agenda, looking at 2013 and those years to come. I've noted, just to answer your exopolitical query and then to get back to maybe a focus on this environmental war issue and on these kind of actors there, that even some of the galactic governance councils are saying that our focus really has to be on being grounded in the planet at this time, and claiming our position on the planet, because we are going to have to confront the plans for the New World Order and deconstruct them. Mm-hmm. That is how they're going to be resolved. And we could have all sorts of special shows on whether there'll be extraterrestrial intervention or not, but that's a very esoteric subject. And I'd like to explore, while Lorraine Murray's here in the area of her expertise, perhaps to take the conversation, if that's okay with everybody on the program, into what they think 2013 and 2014 are going to be like in terms of the possible collapse of the economy. Mm-hmm. I received a message today from someone who says that they received messages from someone who has connections with the Rothschilds, who passed along intel from the Rothschild family that they plan to collapse the economy soon. And that is, by soon is into 2013. You know, we're talking about starting in March, March, April. And that's so that this is a whole new chapter of the unfoldment of this drama vis-a-vis the people versus versus the bloodline bankers and the monarchy, which are issues I think that was raised in Lorraine Murray's last comment. And I'd like to talk about that, because I think that those are the pressing concerns that we're all going to be dealing with over the next 3 to 6 months to a year or more. Is that okay?
That's fantastic. Thank you for bringing me back to Earth. And absolutely, I really do want to go there as well. And the implications of the Wall Street stock market closing as part of this false flag, I think, are very important and connected very much to this new line. So yes, please, let's go there.
Yeah, well, the insight that I had back in 2008 was that the quote financial crisis at that time, and I wrote an article which is, it's called Seven Steps to Transform the Global Financial Crisis. Crisis is in quotes. Is that the financial crisis is really a false flag operation. It's an intentional collapse. It's part of a depopulation program, and that's because the entire debt monetary system, the entire banking system, is a false flag, and that was introduced when Rothschild agents, the Warburgs and others, were sent to the U.S. and to cause the banking crisis of 1907, which was the problem solution mechanism, which then led to the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, which they then passed during the Christmas holidays of 1913, and which they got their selected president because he had an affair, extramarital affair, and they were holding it over his head to sign Woodrow Wilson. And that essentially, all of the banks that own the Federal Reserve are beneficially owned by the Rothschild family or by Rothschild agents. So that means that every dollar bill that you have is effectively owned by the Rothschild family, and you just have a temporary license to use that in exchange for certain goods and services. And it means that within months of the passage of the Federal Reserve Act, the income tax came in, debt money came in, and World War III started. So that was the necessary ingredient to World War III, because then all of the public monies would be debt monies. That is, World War III would be, all those funds would be borrowed by the U.S. government from the Rothschilds, who would then pay interest for the cost of World War III that was started by the by the manipulation of the monarchical families, who were all part of the same bloodlines, with false flag operations like, you know, killing off an archduke. So that followed a century of war, disease, crime, and poverty, of the two world wars, and now the attempted third world war. And so that the essential ingredient was the Federal Reserve Bank. And now the Federal Reserve Bank is probably going to be the key institution to collapse the global economy at the beginning of, or the attempted collapse of the global economy. And so that is going to be maybe one of the issues that will be going on now with the selection happening. And I'd like to hear Loren's thoughts on how she sees 2013 and 14, these kind of immediate years, will be transpiring from a heart point of view, from an economy, from a banker, monarchy, false flag point of view, from a New World Order point of view.
It's not going to be a real short answer, but not.
Yeah, no. I mean, please, just go on.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'd like to bring up the most important reason for World War II, and that was drugs, that was Dope Incorporated. And what happened is the British bankers, financiers, wanted in the 1700s to trade their products from the Industrial Revolution with China for their manufactured goods, for products that China had that the British could tax and make a lot of money on. And they were tea, and that taxation by the British caused the Boston Tea Party and triggered the American Revolution. And the second thing the British wanted to trade with China was, was porcelain. The Chinese porcelains were very, very valuable and famous. And the third thing was silk. So the British said, okay, we want to trade with you for those products. But the Chinese said, we've got everything we want. We're 5,000 years old, and quite frankly, we don't want any of your inferior products of your Industrial Revolution. So the British went back to London and pondered, and they said, well, then what we're going to do is invade India. We will produce opium in the foothills of the Himalayas. Poppies don't like wet feet, so they don't grow down where rice grows in the valleys. They like dry, arid hillsides. And so all of the Himalayan foothills are good places to grow opium poppies. So the British East India Company and the Dutch East India Company produced huge amounts of opium, stored it in warehouses in India, and they sold it to sea captains who would buy it and smuggle it to China because it was illegal there and bribe customs officials. And this took down China. By the year 1900, 250 million Chinese were addicted to opium. Mm. And another benefit to the Rothschilds, who own a lot of the world's railroads, transportation is one of their favorite investments. They were able to open up the western part of the United States by building the railroads, and they did it for free by bringing Chinese coolies to the United States, addicting them to opium, and then they would work all day in horrendously dangerous situations. A lot of them were killed building the Western railroads, and then they would smoke their daily wages all night, the opium. So these are all ways that that the ruling elite have acquired wealth, promoted wealth, opened up new continents, and I can see now that the Southern Hemisphere is their next target. And so what the other thing that happened is that the money created by Dope Incorporated is brought huge revenues and fortunes to British and American families. And Senator John Kerry's family, for instance. Whose phone is ringing?
I thought I muted it. Sorry.
John Kerry's family made their family fortune on his mother's side, the Forbes family, by smuggling opium. President Roosevelt, his middle name was Delano. His mother was born in Shanghai. Her family was involved in the opium trade. So many famous families. So many famous families made their fortunes that way. And the OSS, the Office of Strategic Services in World War II, was involved in, that was an intelligence agency for the U.S. military and the government. And what actually happened is World War II was staged to take over the opium trade and to become allies with China by the British. And the U.S. and the British had agreed to divide China when World War II was over. And what happened is the British made a deal behind the Americans' back with Mao Zedong, and they became partners and squeezed out the U.S. So the U.S. has been fighting Britain's opium wars in Vietnam, in Laos, in Cambodia, in Afghanistan ever since, without benefiting or sharing that much in the opium trade, in the drug trade. And by 1900, the Chinese prohibited younger people from getting addicted to opium. So by 1900, they stopped opium production and smoking and everything. And by 1920, world opium production had dropped to almost zero. Well, the Vietnam War was the securing of a new opium sources and also a new market created globally, including American soldiers who were addicted to heroin and opium in Vietnam. And Vietnam also was where the first weather modification project, Project Popeye, was established. That was to develop HAARP and the Phoenix program was developed in Vietnam, and Colonel Tom Ridge was involved in it. And that was a precursor. That's where they developed the basics for the establishment of Homeland Security, which is operational now in the U.S. And it was the creation of death camps, torture chambers, assassinations, and that was to kill and punish the civilian population in Vietnam who secretly supported the Viet Cong resistance in Vietnam. So we just see the same agenda replayed over and over again through history, and it's all for drugs and the British land grabs and acquiring wealth and ripping off weaker countries and peoples. So what's happening in 2013 and 2014? The same thing. The Western economies are being destroyed. They pump the Western economies. They're dumping them now. And the bankers and the financiers, and especially Queen Elizabeth, make their money on land grabs and development, pumping undeveloped regions, because the Queen of England owns the mineral rights to the entire Commonwealth. Every mineral found below 12 inches from the surface of the ground in the Commonwealth belongs to Queen Elizabeth personally. So that is what's going to happen. The further destruction of the United States, and when I was working at Livermore Lab as a staff scientist, 1989 to 91, my lab partner said, oh, there are two KGB generals here. And I said, well, this is the Cold War. They're our enemy. Why are they here? And, you know, you can't just walk into Livermore Lab, into classified areas, especially if you're in supposedly the arch enemy. And he said, they're here to transfer the technologies of political control. A lot of them are Tesla technologies, mind control, HAARP applications. They are transferring the technologies of political control to the U.S. government. And I said, why? Why? And he said, because they are turning the United States into the Soviet Union, and they're turning the Soviet Union into the United States. And my God, that's exactly what's happening now. So this is going to be a further takedown. We're going to drop like a rock. It's going to happen very, very rapidly. The East Coast and the West Coast, I think up to about 100 miles from the coastline, has been declared a no-constitution zone. So that is going to be a barbed wire minefield which prevents Americans from escaping from this country. And very soon we'll be carrying the national ID cards they did in the Soviet Union. I was there during the Soviet era. It was horrible. And those same two KGB generals who were at Livermore Lab went on to Washington, D.C., to the Department of one of the one of the military departments, and it was Defense Information Service to set up the Russian ID system, the Soviet ID system for the U.S. And Oracle Computers, Larry Ellison is the CEO. He's the one who has had a lot to do with the real ID. So basically, we're going to get dumped, and they're going to strip all of our wealth. They're going to take away social services, and people will be squeezed into cities and FEMA camps. And the Americans have never been through anything like this. We're a very young country. But let me just remind people that the day that HAARP was turned on for the first time, it was called the Woodpecker Signal, which radio ham operators heard all over the world, was July 4th, 1976, the 200th anniversary of the United States of America. And that anniversary very soon will no longer be celebrated, because we are now going into the North American unification, and I can assure you that Queen Elizabeth did not give President Obama $500 million for his election campaign 2 years before he was elected the first time for no reason. And I can assure you that Obama will be reelected this week, this coming week.
So the money marker is definitely what we can watch in our process of deconstructing this as well, because that's been the thread that's been sowing these generations of perpetual war, of mind control, of the ongoing state of violence, whatever phase humanity was in. For instance, now the idea of bringing in opium as a necessary component to continue the war industry is interesting to me, whereas a few centuries, or many centuries, depending, there were gladiators, and there was a easier, we might say, way to manipulate the human to perpetuate this violence. And then as the human itself has evolved, the techniques have also sophisticated to the point where the monetary system was introduced, and the continuing the psyops, the way that our consciousness has been manipulated. I mean, the irony in the U.S. immediately being cut up and becoming the servant military class body continent is
balkanized.
Really,
yeah,
that's really interesting to the myth that all people who are born here and go to school are indoctrinated to believe that this is the free country. You know, there's a lot of deconstruction of. To do here, and how we will undo this knot in our
psyche.
Well,
let me read a quote from the book Dope Incorporated, Britain's Opium War Against the U.S. This was a 7-year investigation. It's very, very interesting, and I got it used on Amazon.com. So this chapter is Chapter 6, The Peking Connection. So this is a quote from Chinese Prime Minister Zhou Enlai in his conversation with Egyptian President Nasser in June of 1965. He said, quote, "Some of them, U.S. troops in Vietnam, are trying opium, and we are helping them. Do you remember when the West imposed opium on us? They fought us with opium. And we're going to fight them with their own weapons. The effect this demoralization is going to have on the United States will be far greater than anyone realizes. And let me tell you that Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense now, who was involved in drugs in Central and South America all through his career, has bought a home on San Juan Island. I'm sorry, on Orcas Island in the San Juan Islands, which are partly off of the coast of Vancouver, British Columbia, and partly off of the coast of Washington State in the Seattle area. So that is a perfect drug route because the Hong Kong headquarters for Dope Incorporated is Jardine and Matheson, where Princess Anne's son is now training, and where David Cameron, the present prime minister, his first job was at Jardine and Matheson. So obviously Dope Incorporated is extremely important to the royal family and the British government. And the P&O, Pacific and Orient shipping lines, belongs to Jardine and Matheson and Dope Incorporated. And so the heroin is transported all over the world on P&O as well as other ways. And it comes into Vancouver and Seattle, or it's coming into Vancouver and then being distributed through the San Juan Islands into the United States and in the Seattle area. So also, the NAFTA highway in the states it goes through, I tracked it from with a friend in Texas, from Texas, Waco, all the way up to the headquarters of the Saskatchewan legislature, which is also a Masonic building. And that NAFTA highway goes through the city or the town or the village in almost every state it goes through, from the U.S. to Canada, where the Scottish Rite headquarters of the Masons is located. That's why Bush had his ranch 7 miles from Waco. That's all about huge amounts of drugs coming in for Dope Incorporated. And Bill Clinton built the MENA airport in Arkansas so that the Rothschilds could receive China White heroin from China in these huge planes that fly it in and land at MENA, and it's a U.S. government-free zone. The U.S. has no jurisdiction over what happens at that airport. So the China White heroin is downloaded from the planes, loaded into Walmart trucks and Tyson chicken trucks, and distributed all over the United States. So there we have, everywhere we look, there are drugs under the tablecloth.
Hmm. Well, and they certainly make it to all of the schools, and they are pretty blatant, actually.
They're flooding the U.S. now with drugs, hard drugs, flooding.
Well, this is a call to all of us that we can make a better decision about that. You know, the human psyche is a very frail and wonderful mechanism at once, you know, to be seduced by the lure of drugs or the lure of alternative conscious experiences, and the escapism, the all of the things that make, you know, the legal drugs appealing, right? The use of alcohol, the number one legal drug that is almost, it makes some of the other ones even unnecessary because so many people will volunteer to just douse themselves with something that disconnects themselves from their current experience, from their current reality. And that's not at all suggesting that, you know, a beer now and then isn't a good thing for, you know, it's not going into alcohol is bad. It's just as one of the legal drugs out there that these harder drugs are on the heels of. I think it's all part of the same conversation, how the human chooses either to engage in their present reality, their present understanding, their present feelings, being with their feelings about what they see and sense about what's going on around them or not. And I feel like at this point, if we could look at how the deconstruction on the level of an empowerment point for all of us, that we could take this information and make somehow it useful for us, that can support the deconstructions, that can support us really getting on board with what you said in the very beginning, Lauren, about how this is our time. We aren't going to be able to go back to sleep. We are going to have to, I think you said, face the wind and really confront this in our time. It's now.
And it's now.
So how can we make use of this information? We're just, you know, various levels of waking up here. We're various levels, and this is a very high-level conversation. This information is very high-level. This is very constructive, very clear in the weave of what it is we have to deconstruct. So I wonder what either or both of you might offer in how the deconstruction might unfold and what the economic collapse provides for us as an opportunity to engage in that deconstruction. Because the economic collapse, I feel, is the greatest gift to the human spirit we've had for a really long time, if we use it well. You know,
I agree with you. I agree with you. And what the way I've used it is to simplify my life and to eliminate a lot of things that were clutter, distractions, I just don't really need it, and to distill my life into something that's much more meaningful and also sustainable. So it's basically, it's two words, it's right conduct. And what's very important now is for people to conduct themselves in the right way. Whatever way they believe that is, that's up to each person to determine. And that's what has always gotten me through very difficult times is right conduct. The only thing we really have is integrity. And when you lose your integrity, you really have nothing. Right conduct is anything as simple as helping someone get their groceries out to their car, or a disabled person or an elder person get on a bus with groceries, or it's talking to the bus driver and making sure that other people on the bus behave themselves when the driver is busy driving, you know, keeping the bus on the street. It's participating in elections in a meaningful way. We may not be able to choose the politicians that are chosen for us that are on the ballot, but there are a lot of initiatives that we can vote for, and those don't represent personalities. Those represent issues. Mm. So there are many, many things to do. Starting a garden, spending time outside, you know, in a garden is a wonderful way to center yourself and to let go of the fear and the anxiety and the tragedy of what's happening. There's a miracle of life every day in our garden to reconnect us to nature and to remind us of right conduct. So basically, I think that right conduct is a very, very important aspect of things that we should explore and change now. Alfred?
Yeah, I was listening to you and trying to see how I would communicate my view of things, and I think that what you've mentioned, Loren, which involve personal values, are all very key, and they're kind of the personal platform that carry one forward. And simplification and personal integrity, you know, are a key focus. My my profession has always been that of a futurist, or kind of my inclination has always been that of a futurist. And so I'm looking at this period, which I've actually been studying now for almost 40 years, starting with my first book, The Age of Cataclysm, which I researched in 1973, 39 years ago, and which was published in 1974, 38 years ago, and which describes the period that we're going through right now, and that will and may intensify over the next several years, and the outcome of which is paradoxically, I believe, positive. And I, as a futurist, I've constructed elaborate sort of reasons why I believe we're on what I called a positive timeline. And this involves going into the nature of time as the fourth dimension of, you know, space of the time-space hologram that we're in, and we know that we're in a time-space hologram, not only from the classical Newtonian physics and the Einsteinian physics, but now from whistleblowers from secret DARPA and CIA time travel programs that I had personal contact with in the early 1970s while I was in New York City government. So I know that they're real. So I'm talking from my own experience here. And by looking at what the nature of time is, and I can hear a dog in the background, so I know that I'm on target. His dog spelled backward is God. From the nature of time, from those studies, we know that we have collective timelines, and that time is arranged almost like multi-lane highways that we all collectively are on, and we have individual timelines, and that we can collectively be on a timeline that could be catastrophic and one that could be positive. And I've argued that we're actually on a positive timeline, although it appears, because we're in a transitional period, that we're on a catastrophic timeline. It's kind of like the process of making sausage, and we're making sausage right now. It looks really, and then all of a sudden, the product of it, once you get through the transitional period, there's a certain way of looking at society, and there are positive things coming through now, and it just depends on which way you want to put the focus. But right now, we're coming to the end game of what we can call the New World Order, which is at some variance by things that I posited, 280,000 years old, 5,000 years old, 300 years old, 60 years old. I mean, it's there are all these various plans, and so the next several years will be sort of like the maximum festering of this boil, of this parasite that we know as the New World Order, but it's foreign, I believe, to the human community of souls, and will be ejected, and its basic technology is to stun, distract, and to trick the human consciousness into obedience, that is, to use power, to get back. So our job really is to bring into consciousness, into public consciousness, all of these issues. Paradoxically, the cosmic forces are with us because there's all sorts of scales that go, you know, where studies have gone back 500 years showing that you have maximal social change and transformation during solar maximums with the high sunspot cycles, and that's in the 2012 to 13 to 14 period in solar cycle 24, and that's where people really go for it. So we're going to have huge solar social upheavals, but of a positive nature, when people will really be demanding social justice and open to new radical ideas. And then over the next two or three years, people like the three people on this radio program and those listening will be putting forward these radical ideas, and they'll fall on fertile ground generally throughout the world. And that's been proven over the last 500 years in a very extensive study done paradoxically in the Soviet Union during the Stalin years, and for his labor, you know, for his good service to science, the scientist that did it was put to death by Stalin, but his data is still valid. And so I think that you know, and then there are larger cosmic cycles which are worthy of shows on their own, and which are very deep data. People can go to exopolitics.com if they want to deal with, for example, the issue of a possible celestial body, a twin star to our sun. 50% of the solar systems in this universe have twin stars, and a single star solar system is the exception rather than the rule. And there's a lot of data that suggests that our solar system may have a twin star that may be a brown dwarf, and that periodically comes into the inner solar system. And there's a lot of data that shows photographs of it. People can go to exopolitics.com. And there's a lot of alarmists there that are saying that its passage now in the next few years may come within 2.85 astronomical units of the sun, and there'll be so much magnetism and between the two that great solar storms and solar flares will be caused in our sun, which in turn will greatly damage the Earth and may even cause a polar shift on our Earth. And I've offered alternative explanations which show photographs of planet-size spacecraft around the sun coming out through triangular interdimensional portals in the sun, and I've argued that these spacecraft are in fact advanced civilizations which are placing shielding around the sun to protect the solar system and Earth, because they have a sort of a protective and governance duty toward the Earth. And that's further balanced by historical artifacts released by the Mexican government, ancient Mayan artifacts, showing which people can go to exopolitics.com and see the actual photographs of the UFOs, and then see the actual photographs of the artifacts. And in these ancient Mayan artifacts, you see the sun and you see extraterrestrial crafts coming out of triangular interdimensional portals in the sun, just like you see in the photographs, and they are protecting against incoming celestial bodies. And shielding the Earth. So it's a fairly coherent story, and I've been studying this celestial body that people call Nemesis, Nibiru, Planet X, Herculebus, the Destroyer, now for 39 years. People can go to exopolitics.com and download a copy of my book, The Age of Cataclysm. It's a free download. It was published in by G.P. Putnam's in the U.S. and Canada. It's published in Japan as well, and I was on national TV and had my 15 minutes of fame back in 1974. So I've been tracking all of this, and the government is doing a usual cover-up. They've killed all of the scientists, a large number of the scientists that are tracking this, and they have a huge cover-up of this celestial body. And from an exopolitics point of view, it appears as though there's a sound argument to be made that they're shielding from this celestial body by the advanced ET crowd. Meanwhile, the planetary controllers, the New World Order controllers, the bankers, etc., have built over, and this is documented, 174 deep underground military bases into which will go the world political and economic elite, the world governments and monarchies, the entire military, the police forces, the medical personnel, the hospitals, the scientists.
Organized crime.
Yeah, organized crime, the scientists who bring you GMOs, all the technocrats who are kind of sold out. And guess what? It's all mooted because we're on a positive timeline now, because galactic governance from an exopolitical point of view, this is why I call exopolitics the science of relations among intelligent civilizations in the multiverse, as a salvation science, because it allows us to understand how higher intelligent civilizations are protecting vulnerable populations like our own against predatory elites on planets that they have cultivated over many millennia. So that's kind of my view, and my optimistic view is that in the U.S. in 20th century, part of my mind. In 2017, 16, and 2020, those are two presidential years, I'm deeply involved in organizing presidential campaigns for those years right now, and we intend on winning back from the time travel captured CIA apparatus who's used time travel capability to capture the U.S. presidency on behalf of the banking elites. The CIA is just the muscle for the British and Dutch crowns and the banking elites. And we're going to recapture the Constitution. And we have competing time travel data shows that we're possibly successful. So whistleblower Andrew D. Pashaga, who's a whistleblower from the U.S. time travel program and a former chrononaut, has in fact been given data that one of his runs, either in 2016 or 2020, may be successful. So we will see. You know, this is a probabilistic universe, and it all depends on collective intention. So this is we've had our spaceship hijacked by a predatory elite. However, the crew and the passengers are now reorganizing, and we're getting ready to take back control of the spaceship. And that's the perspective that I have as a public interest lawyer and a concerned citizen. And so that's kind of the perspective that I want to give for, let's say, 2012, 2013 through 2025.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much. The it's interesting to go into future in from my rural perspective in that I feel very clearly in this time, some people have called this ascension or whatever, but this at this time in the human consciousness, we're potentially probability is we will completely transcend time, space, consciousness as it is. And we will move into the new time, to the no time, as a collective, universal love organism that is truly our natural state. And in the no time, we certainly don't need borders, and we certainly don't need countries, and we certainly don't need presidents who, you know, or we don't need any of it, because in the no time, we have a sense of our personal integrity and our connection to all that is. And that's, I feel very much the order of the future direction, however time that works out in the linear reality. I tend to be kind of blank. I don't know the linear formula, but I do have a strong sense that in the ultimate evolution of the human as a species, as we move into our true state of who and what we are and begin to really explore what the full potential of a human is in the no time and the space where we are just simply all one and know that and live that and are excited about that. And yes, I am so grateful that you both have joined me. We have been joined with two extraordinary minds of our time, Alfred Lambermont Weber and Lorraine Murray. You can find out more about Alfred at exopolitics.com, and you can find a lot more about Lorraine on exopolitics.com as well. There are many fantastic interviews that the two of them have done to further our education about the multidimensional play going on here on planet Earth with so many levels of rulers and organizations of different agendas that just don't get told us on the mainstream news that have been intentionally kept from us, that we might have this opportunity to find out for ourselves, and in that process of finding out for ourselves, develop our own sense of what we can do and find our strength in uncovering this madness and then reassembling it in a way that actually feels right to us. That is our option as co-creators. That is the power of what the human spirit has the potential to be a part of here on planet Earth. And the education that you both have offered us is really, really appreciated and so valuable at this time for those of us who are really ready to move into the deconstruction, who are really ready to reclaim our minds. And I would just like to offer in my closing note of that, the power of the dying process and how when something is in decay, there's always something new pushing through. And I think that that is very much what I heard both of you saying, that, you know, in this process that is very climactic, that is coming to a head, that we do have the opportunity to face and reorganize in ourselves, there is the new. And we have that option to really turn our energy and our focus toward what that new might be for us as individuals and as a collective Earth dwelling universal citizenry here. It's a very exciting time. So we have reached our 2-hour point, and I want to say thank you again to Alfred and to Lorraine for joining us. I want to thank all the ancestors that have gone before us and been taking this road of light and making it possible for us to come here. And thank you to the dog who is bringing our God spirit with purpose. And thank you to all the spirit beings and extraterrestrial, all those who have joined us in spirit. for this broadcast as well. And I will just pass it to both of you for final notes, and we'll sign off.
Yeah. Well, thank you again. And just, you know, we're on a positive timeline.
And I'd just like to say there's nothing to be afraid of. We live in a dynamic world, a dynamic environment. Planet Earth is a very dynamic place. And being afraid gets in the way of people changing and evolving. And that is the key to survival. It's responding to changes in the environment and in our lives. And if we choose for it to be a positive change, it will be. If we choose for it to be a negative change or to just not respond out of fear, it will be negative. It's up to us to make our own right choices. Thank you so much.
Thank you both. This is Jamil Graham. You have been tuned in to the Alchemy of Light broadcast. You can find out more about what we're up to at alchemyoflight.org. And until next time, please do take care of yourselves and take good care of each other. Bye-bye.